Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to today's episode of On Point. I'm in Studio A. My name is Don Allen, and my co-host, mentor, and just all-around great person, Mr. Ronald A. Edwards, is in Studio B. Mr. Edwards, how's it going on this beautiful Saturday afternoon?
Well, it's a beautiful day here in the Twin Cities, Don. The Minnesota Gophers have just fallen behind 7-0 to the Fighting Illini in Champaign-Urbana. That's not good. This is a dark day in America, Don. This is clearly the things. Oh, I'm sorry, Don. I read the script that Mr. Roll sent out for us.
Oops.
I'm sorry, my listening audience. that was from Mr. Roll. The man who spent $300 million of the Koch brothers and the heads of some NFL football teams and NBA basketball teams. Oops, we'll be dealing with that later on. Now, this is a great day in America, baby. Great day in America, no doubt about it. Barack Obama wins the second term against enormous odds, all kinds of skullduggery. I'm just fascinated, Don, by the number of fakes and phonies, particularly on the liberal side, now trying to get back on the right side of the boat so we don't capsize, you know what I mean? The Republicans are just imploding. I understand you got a quick piece there on an analysis of Rush Limbaugh, who just went ballistics, if you will, here a couple of days ago. I thought we were going to have to get him some more cocaine, man.
Yes. Oh, exactly. And some pain pills, some Vicodins there.
Because he's big. He's big on that.
now we do have a caller on hold already, even before I gave out the number. So I'm just going to ask that caller to just stand by for a second, and we'll be right with you. But, Mr. Edwards, you know, a lot of deep philosophical conversations are going on about how the Republican Party can change its brand, how they can attract more minority ethnic, the Asians, the Blacks, the Hispanics, the Somalis to their cause, and it's really interesting because it creates a significant problem with the people in the GOP offices running the RNC and the different right-leaning agencies that have not tolerated anybody a shade darker than khaki, not even to give them information or advice. But I found this very interesting. There's a show, great show, radio show, called The Majority Report, and Sam Cedar did a really good piece analyzing Rush Limbaugh's rant. And I'd like to just go ahead and play that for our audience, and then we can come back and analyze it later. So this is Sam Cedar talking about Rush Limbaugh. He's actually going to play the clip, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
Here we go.
Michael sent me a message that apparently Rush Limbaugh opened up with, "None of this makes any sense."
For those of you who don't know, Random Rush is when I randomly turn on Rush Limbaugh through my app here, whatever it is, Wonder Radio, and I listen to Rush Limbaugh for 60 seconds, and I rebut him in 90 seconds. I know some of you don't like to hear from him, but sorry, folks, that's what we're going to do. And let's see if... Okay, hold on. There he is. Okay, so here we go. I start now. Here it is, Random Rush.
Why don't the Marco Rubios, the Alan Wests? What a great man. What a great American, Alan West. What a great role model, Clarence Thomas. Herman Cain. None of it counts. Don't tell me the Republican Party doesn't have outreach. We do. But what are we supposed to do now? We're supposed to, in order, that mean, open the borders and embrace the illegals. Is that what I want you to think about this? Is that what it means? Is that what the Republican establishment said? We got to reach out to Hispanics. Is that what they mean? If we're not getting the female vote, do we become pro-choice? Do we start passing out birth control pills? Is that what we have to do? Okay, let me ask you, if that's what we have to do.
All right. Now in 90 seconds, well, this is what I've been talking about since the opening remarks of this program today. This is why the Republican Party will never, ever, ever again, well, at least until maybe my kid, my 7-year-old is voting, win a national election. Because though you will get the Peggy Noonans, the Dick Morrises, the Britt Humes, the David Brooks, all of the Republican establishment types, all the non-Neanderthal, just money-grubbing Republican types, they may say, we've got to expand the party. We cannot overtly hate brown people. We cannot deny access to birth control to women. We cannot say that there's legitimate rape and illegitimate rape, and we can't continue to kowtow to these religious fundamentalists. They have created a Frankenstein. And Rush Limbaugh is one of the guys, the brain of the Frankenstein. There is just too much incentive on the right to let go of all that hatred, because that's how he makes his money.
Okay, Mr. Edwards, that was the clip with the Sam Cedar analyzing it. And we do have a couple of people on hold that I'd like
to let's get them in, because it's not good for us to put them on hold. Let's get our calls in, and we can come back to Dr.
Yes.
Frankenstein later.
Yeah, we sure can. Go ahead. You're live on the air. Mass is calling. Where are you calling from?
This is Bertrand Schoberg. I'm calling from St. Paul.
Hey, how you doing, sir? How you doing? And your gentleman, Mr. Edwards, I'd asked him to call in today because this is something relevant to our topic about the black leadership and the brainwashing that's been going on, because this man has an organization. And so why don't you just tell us a little bit, you know, about, you know, what you're trying to do, what the movement is. And why.
Right. Okay, I'm the founder of the Black Man Stand Up movement. And pretty much it's kind of a all walk movement, not too much talk. Our basic goal is to find our similarities with everybody in our community. Me being from Minneapolis, there's not necessarily a black community where there's nothing but black people. You'll find mostly white communities, but you know, I'm from over south, so I have a lot of different nationalities. I live over south. And mm-hmm. and so I had to look like, okay, what's the distractions? Well, race would be a number one distraction. It's to raise awareness that throughout all our differences, we have one commonality of being the lower class for the most part. The lower class is not spoken of or anything, even with this election that just passed. I was waiting for anybody to bring up issues on the lower class. The lower class came in to affect when they said something about the 46% of people that don't pay taxes or anything. There is nothing talking about empowering the lower class. The lower class will have to do it for themselves. What gave me this idea is that Black Wall Street and how that was founded. And this is something that I happened to just stumble upon while I was living in Texas for a while.
Okay, with that said, you know, there's areas, and our next caller, this is going to be relevant more to him because he's on hold right now, but to you, sir, we have organizations here in the Twin Cities, especially black organizations, like the African American Leadership Forum, which we're going to get into a little bit more deeper here, that have been kind of the pinnacle for social cabals rather than addressing the significant disparities, especially in the Twin Cities, of the black people, basically. And so what has happened was, in my point of view, that they have rejected a lot of the teachings of Martin Luther King, the Black Panthers, Malcolm X, and have chosen to be instructed by their white overseers. And I guess my last question, unless Mr. Edwards, my co-host, has a question, I mean, how do you avoid that? Because if you stay tuned in here, we're to go through a piece that's dealing with the NAACP and the African American Leadership Forum that seems afield to any cognitive thinking, as far as I'm concerned. But how do you deal with that when those types approach you and kind of want to suck you into their organization without giving you your due diligence and your fair share of accommodations for your mission?
Everything that I do is on my own. That's business, and I don't put my feelings into business too much. I'm pretty much here. I am here. What I have to offer. I'm an ex gang member. I spent 2/3 of my life living that type of life. So here I am. I'm grown. I have kids. You know, I've been out of the system for years now, and everything. And I'm trying to do something positive with my life. And it's to be aware that, you know, a lot of us from where I come from aren't necessarily going after our white overseers. We have a different message that's portrayed to us to go ahead and perpetrate another type of lifestyle.
Okay. What are a couple issues? What are a couple issues that you've been involved in over the last 3 or 4 months? Just kind of give us an indication of how you're moving. What are a couple of issues that you've been involved in?
Since June, up until recently, I was managing a sober house in North Minneapolis for our CCS treatment center. Through doing that, we work with Enough is Enough, No One Dies in North Minneapolis, and we've been pretty much doing volunteer work, anything from knocking at doors to raise awareness about violence in the community and how to get involved in the system to make your neighborhood a better place for your kids to grow. That was inside of Terrell Mays and Ms. L. George that got killed, you know, just for being kids in the wrong house and everything. And doing that, it's a full 360 payback because I got to take other brothers that was in recovery to go do something good, and they're going through the experience and everything at the same time.
I think I saw you at the site of both of those incidents that you just talked about. Okay, Mr. Allen, leave it to you. Anything else?
I just like you to hang tight and listen because now, Ms. Edwards, we have a situation that we talked about in our production meeting. I would just also like to let everybody know you're listening to On Point Broadcasting Live from the Apple Studio in downtown Minneapolis. And our call-in number is 877-537-2878. Again, that number, toll-free, is 877-537-2878.
And just want to take the opportunity to thank the young brother and continue to stay the course.
Yes, please do. And then, as we get into, Mr. Harris, we have a situation here with the local publication, Black publication, Insight News, and their story, the Minneapolis NAACP Silent on School Issues. And we have a former candidate for Minneapolis mayor, a community activist, and a champion of education for Black youth on the lines, Mr. Al Flowers. And Mr. Flowers, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Don. And first of all, I'd like to thank you and Mr. Edwards for continuing to put our issues out there.
Al Flowers. Oh, okay. Yeah. How you doing, Al? All right. Okay.
Yeah, I'm doing great.
All right.
Go ahead,
Ms. Flowers.
Mm-hmm. I want to comment on, you know, that article that's online and might come out in the paper talking about the NAACP silent book or Hodges silent on issues of education. And first of all, I'd say just a year or two ago, President Hodges said, we need to take our kids out of the schools, if you remember that article there. Uh-huh. And then and he came back, and this time he put the test scores in a paper about what young African-American kids are doing, and the scores are the scores. Those are factual things. So, you know, I get kind of concerned when a person like Bill English, who, if you remember, Bill English was the one that ran City Inc., and they closed City Inc. School, and but they never told the kids. And
now,
so
you're
the
talking
kids
about
walked
William
up
English.
To,
I want to get this clear for, you know, transparent. William English, who was the dean of the City Inc.'s alternative school there that closed, and the African-American students and others were left without any educational institution to go to. And that came on the heels of the disappearance of $600,000. Is that the same party you're talking about? The man who runs a convenience store in North Minneapolis right now?
Yes, that's William English.
I wasn't sure.
And he and so when And then, and the problem with, you know, I appreciate President Hodges of the NAACP, because it doesn't matter that the superintendent is a African American. He's not looking at race because of these scores when our kids are failing. That, you know, this is all about our kids. So when like David Jennings, I think that's his name, and Peter Hutchinson, they went to court on Jennings. They didn't ever want him in, but now you sit here and get these kind of test scores when the superintendent's been there 5 years. She was the academic chief before that. Mm-hmm. So I'm with Bill English, who's been going to the school board, he'll say that all the time, that he's been going there for many years. Well, this is what we got out of it.
But let me ask you a question, Ms. Flowers, because I just, you know, again, we have both a local, national, international audience. Because I'm kind of puzzled about the integrity of the article. I too have had a chance to read the article. I've had it in discussion with my colleague and our production staff. Now, I've been present, Mr. Flowers, when you have appeared before the school board, and in fact, on a couple occasions, actually, Mr. English was also present in the room. I'm a little puzzled, Mr. Allen, as I'm saying this to Mr. Flowers, because Mr. Flowers was talking about test scores as well as the overall well-being of African-American students. And also I'm aware, and I was in a meeting at the Urban League this summer with some 60 people in attendance, a meeting sponsored by the Minnesota Black Educators under the able leadership of Professor Francine Chakotas. And William English stood up in that meeting, in which the two responders were the Commissioner of Education and Superintendent Bernadette Johnson, and he reminded the superintendent of a very critical report from the Minneapolis Foundation, which says that there were serious questions about the authenticity of the data. Now, Mr. Flowers was not at that meeting, but I was. I was there. And I've also been at meetings where Mr. Flowers, representing the NAACP, because, Mr. Flowers, aren't you like the chair of the Political Action Committee or something like that?
No, since I took over We the People United, I had to let that go. I'm the president. That's our political affiliation.
Okay, but you were but when you were appearing before the board a number of months ago, before We the People, you were the chair of the committee, because there was a move to oust you and President Hodges because of the strong positions that you were taking on education. Am I correct?
Right, exactly. I was Booker's community action chair, and we got some pushback, and you're absolutely right.
Yeah, because the NAACP, yeah, that crew, Mr. Allen, so that you understand, they brought the national overseer for the NAACP's branches, a guy by the name of Reverend Gail Ford. You remember him, Don. He was involved with Reverend Gallman here a decade ago. They brought him all the way here from Baltimore to tell the Minnesota State Conference that Mr. Flowers could not act as an NAACP-er, that though there was no evidence that was true. And so I'm puzzled by Mr. Flowers. I said all that to say I'm puzzled by Mr. English's attack upon President Hodges and yourself and other NAACP-ers, including current school board member Ellison, Kim Ellison, who served as education chair before her appointment and then election to the board. What is Mr. English trying to accomplish here, Mr. Flowers?
Well, I think it's about this leadership forum that was not inclusive. They called it the African American Leadership Forum, and they got a lot of money over there to push our issues. And they haven't said anything. I mean, I would like to know what's Bill English, what's their plan, because they have pushed no issue. They've been together for 6 years. They got a magazine that they put African American, I call them the bourgeois. They put them in on the front page to do things like that. But they have did nothing. This is the same, like I said, same Bill English that led the African American Leadership Forum with Randy Staden, and they weren't registered, but they was going to all the meetings and taking resources. I think Booker Hodges did an article about that in the Spokesman Recorder. So I think that's where that animosity come from.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Flowers.
Let me interject this real quick. The story is it's on the Insight News website, insightnews.com commentary. The title of the story is Minneapolis NAACP Silent on School Issues.
Boy, I can't understand that. I'm really sad by that.
I need to read this last paragraph because Mr. Flowers hit it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The last paragraph of the story says, what is needed is for the NAACP to join others in this struggle to improve outcomes for students. Minneapolis Public Schools and Superintendent Johnson have been receptive to constructive criticism and engagement by all of the stakeholders. It would be helpful in our op-ed pieces if we offer constructive advice. The proverbial, it takes a village to raise a child, is still valid. We need the NAACP and its leadership to join organizations such as the African American Leadership Forum, Put Kids First, the Coalition of Black Churches, the Minnesota Business Partnership, in pushing for the reforms that will enable Minneapolis Public Schools and Superintendent Johnson to achieve the objective of making all Minneapolis Public School students graduating college ready. So this is a move, Mr. Edwards and Mr. Flowers, by the African American Leadership Forum, a political strategy and a chance for public discourse to kind of shed some negative light on the NAACP. When I did read Mr. Hodges' op-ed piece in the Spokesman Recorder, and I actually did receive the data, and it's right on the money, Mr. Edwards and Mr. Flowers. So,
well, I definitely know it is because I'm a member of the Minnesota Minority Educators, Black Educators, MAPSE, and through the efforts, again, of a very outstanding educator, Professor Francine Chacolas, that information was forwarded through the offices of Brenda Casillas, the commissioner, and there's absolute concurrence, if you will, with the data that Mr. Hodges, or President Hodges, speaks to. And the numbers, and again, I have to say, with respect to Mr. Flowers, I've known him and seen him, that I've seen Mr. Flowers present in the same room with Mr. English talking about this problem, and I've never seen Mr. English give Mr. Flowers or the community any kind of support with respect to the statements being made by the NAACP's representative. I'll do it that way, Mr. Flowers, not to get President Hodges or anybody in trouble. You were representing the organization. I know that when Ben Jealous was here a couple of weeks ago, I know some of those individuals in a series of workshops in a central of the University of Minnesota approached Ben Jealous and complained about President Hodges and yourself, Mr. Flowers, and talked in terms of the need for another purge in the NAACP to silence y'all. Is that what it's come to, Mr. Flowers?
I think so, Ms. Edwards. I think that what's going on right now, the leadership forum has got, and the way Don Allen just read that, is telling us, come on in. They want you to come on in, but you can't say nothing. You can't say what Booker wrote. You can't talk about these bad scores and what's happening, and we're going to just keep taking it year after year. And they, not only that, but they got African American Leadership Forum is in this group with Mayor Archie Ryback, Chris Coleman, Superintendent Bernadette Johnson, Chris Stewart is on there. That's from the Leadership Forum. And it's this big group put together by, and they called Strive Minnesota, come out of Cincinnati, but they got to change the name because Strive won't let them use it. But
so
they've already received.
Mm-hmm.
No, this is two. That's the other one. That's a whole another one. That's another one. That's another one. But
wow.
This one I'm talking about with Strive Minnesota, the United Way has already secured $5 million to pull this off. And now they're coming to the community after they put it together. They had the African American Leadership Forum as the community-based organization. And I think I was at the board meeting, and I said, wait a minute, they're not a community-based organization. And then they said they weren't. But when they put the grant application in, they put it in saying that was a community-based organization.
They're definitely not a community-based organization. They're the, like you said, the bourgeoisie of spokespersons. They're not even considered leadership. But you know what? I wrote on a Facebook page called North Talk because I was a little bit concerned about, I'm hearing that Betsy Hodges, councilwoman, Minneapolis City Councilwoman Betsy Hodges might be running for mayor. And
yes, that's true.
If that's the case, she would have to answer some questions about the attempted dismantling of the fledgling Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights in 2008 and her connection with the African-American leadership forum besides being married to one of the principals in that group. And so with that said, you know, that's going to be an uphill battle because we're going to keep an eye on that. But getting back to the African-American Leadership Forum here and Chris Stewart, you know, there are some serious issues that you both, Mr. Edwards and Mr. Flowers, bring up as far as inclusion. We all know that the African-American community voice is deep, it's vast, and there's many voices. And what they have successfully actually done is squeezed out the voices that of reason or the voices that say, we need to take another look at this because something is wrong here.
Well, let me just say this, and appreciate Mr. Flowers for taking time to come on. I know that we'll probably hear from President Hodges because contrary to what Mr. English and others may think, he has provided leadership. Just because the white press doesn't write up President Booker T. Hodges doesn't mean that Mr. Hodges, Mr. Flowers, and others are not out there trying to do something, if you will. But I would like to see Mr. English's proof that the NAACP has provided erroneous, inconsistent, and as he said, illiterate evidence, if you will. I just think that for the purpose of proper examination, that Mr. English, Mr. Stewart, who helped write the letter, and others need to at least be required to do that. And by the way, they meet every Saturday morning at UROC. I think they met down there this morning. They have, you know, jelly rolls and what you call it. And they talk about the poor people of North Minneapolis and South Minneapolis like we're a bunch of animals. And so they need to be careful because people have been taping some of those conversations. But anyway, Mr. Flowers, appreciate you taking the time to call in. But I have to say on the record for our audience across the country that Mr. English's statement about the silence of the NAACP, that's just not true. And I just wonder why Mr. English, you know, I was going to go over there and buy some bubble gum from his convenience store there on Glenwood, but I don't think I'll do that now.
If I could say one last thing, I would say that remember he had at the last day of City Inc. The kids went to the door to open the door and they couldn't get in, and he's been doing this to our community a long time, and it's over. But I love what Don Allen said about they're saying that you should be inclusive. I mean that they didn't ask. When they started the leadership forum, they didn't ask anybody to come in, and now they're sitting there with a bunch of talking heads that's not on the ground doing the work like what you do, Mr. Edwards, what Don is doing, trying to report on these situations. And so we should, I don't think we should have to go and go up under them and then be silent. Because
There are people out here who are more than their equals. You're absolutely correct.
Yeah, and they can't say nothing about our economic. They don't talk. They can talk a good game, but they're not going to do nothing, and they're not going to say it publicly. You got to. We say things. If it's the truth, it's the truth, and that's why I believe we'll win at the end. I know.
All right, Ms. Flowers, want to thank you for taking the time and send our best to President Booker T. Hodges, head of the Minneapolis NAACP. Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Evers, you know, kind of switching to your politics, we've had a couple of people on hold here, and I'd like to get them in if that's okay.
Get them, Mr. Allen. Get them right in. Get them right in.
Okay. Here we go. You're live on point, Mass. Who's calling? Where you're calling from?
This is Bertrand Schobert calling from St. Paul again. I got bumped up earlier.
Okay, there you go. We got you there. And just stand by and hello, 540. You are live on the air. May I ask who's calling? Where are you calling from?
You know me, Dom. This is your friend Eugene Williams from Facebook. Hey, Mr. Williams, how are you, sir?
I am well. It's good to hear your voice. I was looking through Facebook, and I saw you were talking about the whole issue of what Republicans need to do to have a chance of winning again in the future at some point, and I just wanted to call in.
Okay, Dr. Williams, I'm also here with my co-host and mentor, Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, this is, if I can call him Dr. Williams, who had me on his show a long time ago, last year.
Last year, yeah, I remember that. Mr. Williams, welcome.
It's wonderful to be talking to you both. I just saw your topic, and I thought to myself, I mean, as Donald knows, I am an ardent Obama supporter. However, if I were a Republican strategist, what I would tell them to do is to go ahead and find some of these young African-American, Hispanic, or Asian, or female faces of their party and cultivate them to become leaders. And then what they need to do, rather than just have a face of color or a female face parroting the same old talking points that GOP white WASP cookie-cutter candidates have been, you know, saying for years, they need to acknowledge, yes, there have been unfairnesses in the system towards women and minorities, but here's how becoming a member of the Republican Party can help change those things. That's the one message I don't think people heard.
No,
I think people heard throughout the election, you know, Obama's evil, Obama's a communist, Obama's this and Obama's that, when his actions don't even remotely dictate that.
Absolutely
people begin
correct.
To see through that and see this is foolishness. But if they go ahead and find that person that can number one, not parrot GOP talking points, acknowledge that there has been unfairness and injustice in the past, and lay out an articulate way to show how following Republicans can help right the past wrongs, I think they have as good a chance as anybody else in upcoming elections.
Yeah, and Dr. Williams, I agree 100%. But you know what? I have someone, Mr. Edwards, who has the phone lines are going crazy, and I need this James to get in on this.
All right, let's do that. Dr. Williams, appreciate your call, sir.
All right, then.
Thank you.
And James, is this you? Are you there?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And
I'm here.
You just heard Dr. Williams.
Wait a minute, I think that's Dr. Williams. Is that James or is that Dr. Williams?
Both of them.
No, it's James.
Oh, James, okay, go ahead.
Yeah, we have them both there. Let's keep them both there for now. But James, you had asked me a question. Again, Facebook is like a wonderful thing because you get all types of people asking, you know, you question.
Yeah.
But go ahead, James, and kind of lay out what you were asking for our listening audience.
Well, I was asking earlier in the year, during the middle of the election, what the Republican Party could do to earn the votes for the minorities and blacks especially. You know, it was the Republican Party that freed the slaves. It was the Republican Party that was really responsible for the ERA amendments, for the Civil Rights Amendments. I hear a lot of people that tell me that a lot of those Democrats that were down south that were against the amendments joined the Republican Party after the amendments were passed, and that's just not true. Why would you join the party that was against you in the first place?
Well,
I was the one that pointed – just one second.
Okay.
And I was the one, Donnie, that pointed out what LBJ said about the black people – and I'm not going to repeat it on the air because it's not very flattering at all, but you know what he said.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Well,
go ahead.
No, if I could jump in, I mean, all those are very good points, all those are very salient points, and all those are points that have been brought up 1,000 times before. I don't think it's a matter of African-Americans not being grateful to the great Republicans of the past, the Abraham Lincolns, the Frederick Douglasses. I don't think that's the case. I think, though, if we look at how the GOP has marketed itself recently over the past decades since the Reagan years, or how I would say rather than how it's allowed itself to be marketed, you know, I think those great Republican icons of the past were turned over in their graves if they saw the current GOP. And I think that's what has to happen. When things change and when things evolve, a group has to evolve and change with them. The Democrats did that. Republicans didn't seem to do that, or at least by appearances. So what I'm saying is, if Republicans allow themselves to be marketed in a different way, keep their same core values, but understand now what the landscape is and understand that they're going to have to reach out, not double down on the rhetoric of the past, because we can talk all we want about what you know, Frederick Douglass has done for us, and what Abraham Lincoln has done, and other great black Republicans. But we can also point to countless examples of, especially in these past 4 years, when we've had current modern GOP people say things about this president that has been, that can't be characterized as anything but racist.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, times change and people change and parties change. It's mm-hmm. time now for the Republicans to evolve back to what they used to be.
And not go in the direction of the Whigs, which is what led to the creation of the GOP in the 1840s. Appreciate that observation.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I just want to let you know, we will be on until 4:15 today.
Okay. Oh, good. Great. Okay.
I just saw that, so this is a great conversation. But one thing I'd like to address James and Mr. Williams and Mr. Edwards, if you have anything, just jump right in, because this is something that, and you know, in 2008, I was the campaign manager for Barb Davis White, who ran against Keith Ellison unsuccessfully, but 22% of the vote, 70-something thousand people. And I found it, as a black man dealing with the Minnesota GOP and the Minnesota Republicans, that it was really difficult. I was more like, and I'll give you an example. I never did this, but I was more liked, or would have been more liked, if I was at an event at a nightclub downtown with the Republicans, and there were some obvious what looked to be black homeless men, and I turned to the white Republicans and I would say, "You guys better check your wallets. These two homeless black guys just walked by." They would love me. And that's how, like, Alan West and others.
Williams and Steele and some of that crew of a decade ago. Go ahead. Go ahead, Don. You're right.
And then Steele, you know, just recently, well, not recently, but when he was the chairman of the RNC, on video, I have it on my
About the other Steele, but go ahead. Yeah. Both of them, thank God.
He said, you know, we can get more minorities or black people by having fried chicken and potato salad at the Republican Party events. And so with that kind of thinking, you know.
Not like Fuzzy Zeller.
Yeah, it makes it okay. And
but see, therein lies the problem. The current GOP does not understand, first of all, this whole idea that black people only vote for people of their own race. Well, mm-hmm. the history of blacks and voting shatters that myth on its face.
Mm-hmm.
We know they vote based on party, and they vote based on what party they think is going to address their issues the best, knowing that neither one party particularly is you know, totally invested in their interests. But at least they look at one party and see where there's the occasional black person, the occasional woman, the occasional person of color, and they're used as window dressing.
Absolutely.
And then look at the other party, where there are an overwhelming number and a growing number of people who are given strong leadership positions in that party leadership. Now, I thought that when the GOP picked Michael Steele, that was a great move forward. But then I think about – I mean, to me, when I looked at all the things that Michael Steele was trying to get that party to do, I think he ran into some of the same stubbornness within his own party that Obama ran into when he was running against the party. And I think that's why he's now on the outside looking in, and now he's an MSNBC you know, contributor,
mm-hmm.
not even a Fox contributor anymore, because he's a person that saw into the future and said, listen, what you're doing is not going to work. I'm willing to bet now – that a lot of folks in the Republican Party would be more than happy to listen to whatever ideas he had now, because they realize that doubling down on conservatism and doubling down on rhetoric that appeals to white, older men that are generally better financially well off, or white men who live under the illusion that if they do all the things that we're told to do in school, they will automatically move up into the ranks of the wealthy elite, you know. But that's the problem, that the GOP has a marketing problem, and they haven't realized it yet. And the scary thing about it is I don't think they care.
No, I don't think so either. Brother Williams, I think that's the piece that is most troubling. That will have to be something that the Republicans will have to work out, and the most current of that is the leadership battle that will take place inside of the Republican caucus in the Senate. There's no problem in the House. Though the Tea Party crazies, though there are fewer of them now than were in 2010, oops, we'll talk in terms of trying to send Mitch McConnell, the senior citizen out of the Commonwealth of Kentucky, in a little better direction, if you will.
you know, I've already heard them discussing about that they need to deal against dement, as an example, maybe listen more to Lindsey Graham. The Rubio thing is interesting, but the problem is that there are still too many in the Republican Party that still look at Rubio as quote unquote not quite white enough.
Okay. Well, I mean, and you're making the brilliant point, and what I'm saying is they've got a good farm team in the Republican Party if they use them correctly. And like I said, I'm a Democrat, so I shouldn't even be telling Republicans this. But if you've got a Marco Rubio, if you've got a Nikki Haley, if you've got a Bobby Jindal, if you've got a Tim Scott over in South Carolina, a black man elected in South Carolina to that office, whoa.
The United States House of Representatives, right.
Yeah.
Yep,
you've got
yep,
some people
yep.
in that farm team that if you cultivate them right and you get their message right, you might be not a Herman Cain message.
No, not Herman.
Where you parrot old GOP talking points and come up with, you know, silly catchphrases for budgets that everybody on both sides know won't work. But somebody that has a solid message, a Republican conservative message, but somebody that says, I am you. I've been there. That's what Colin Powell was able to draw. That's
yeah.
what Condoleezza Rice in many ways is able to draw from. But they're not doing that, and if they keep ignoring these people and talking about not white enough, then they also got to realize that in 2040, America won't even be white enough. In
That's
2040,
right.
Hispanics will be the majority. Everybody
right.
knows that. Everybody sees that. So this whole thing about, you know, just you know, keeping it white and it's all right. White people are beautiful people. Some of my best friends are white folks. But my goodness. They better start figuring out.
Well, let me pull this one at you, and for our listening audience, and this discussion dialogue is going on about future of the GOP. The second most dangerous African American in the minds of the GOP leadership, of course, the first is the current president of the United States, but the second is Colin Powell. Colin Powell still has tremendous influence inside of the Republican Party, and I think some of that was shown on Election Day. When he had no equivocation with respect to endorsing for the second time President Barack Obama. I've heard discussions amongst quote-unquote Republican activists. There is a group that really are thirsting for Colin Powell to put his hand of leadership on the discussion, the dialogue that needs to take place, and needs to take place pretty quick, by the way, because before you know it, the by-elections of 2014 are upon you. And my sense is if the Republicans, gentlemen, don't make the kind of adjustment that we've been talking about here on this little blog radio program, you know, with a bunch of colored guys, quote-unquote, is that they will, in fact, go. And I would suggest to my listening audience, go back, get your history books, the real history books, you'll probably have to go to university libraries, and take a look at the downfall of the Whig Party.
Yes.
And take a look at the issues that drove that party to ground and caused the Republican Party to become the second party. See, people are under impression in this country, and that's part of because our history is so poorly taught. People think that from day one, from the founding of the Republic, that it was always Democrats and Republicans. No, ladies and gentlemen, it was Democrats and Whigs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I would strongly appeal to many in our listening audience to go take a deep look at the history of the debate. Now, I understand, by the way, gentlemen, in the movie Lincoln, Daniel Day-Lewis, Steven Spielberg, et cetera, I understand there are a couple of scenes in which there are these reflections being made about what it was that it caused the Whigs to impose some almost 20 years before. So I think that this has been a very fruitful discussion with respect to what the Republicans need to be looking at. Now, here's the other problem, gentlemen, and this is closing for me. I just don't know how well they accept a good point of view from a person of color.
Well, they better learn how to.
They really quick and fast in a hurry. Yeah.
If they can't figure that out, then they can definitely kiss the presidency goodbye. They'll still be able to win House seats in some of these, you know, some of these different states. But if they can't humble themselves enough to realize that there are African Americans out there with Republican values who are articulate, who can articulate the facts, but also realize that there have been some things in the past that Republicans, the current Republican Party, has to deal with, as well as. Because it's not going to be good enough anymore to keep throwing that, you know, the Abraham Lincoln thing in people's face.
No,
we are a very what have you done for me lately society.
Mm-hmm.
And most of America, they remember Barack Obama, they remember Jesse Jackson, they remember Colin Powell.
Mm-hmm.
They read about Abraham Lincoln in history books, but other than that, they don't really know. And they also know, if they've read history, they also know that Abraham Lincoln may or may not have had black freedom at the forefront of his mind. Abraham Lincoln's primary goal was to save the Union.
And that has always been my position as a historian. I've written about that, and et cetera. It's interesting to hear you say that, because oftentimes I hear far too many discussions about Abraham Lincoln's prime consideration was the freeing of the slaves. It was not. It was the issue of economics. It was the issue of tariffs. It was the issue of the conflict between the cotton growers of the South and the textile manufacturers of New England and the North. And, sir, that is an excellent point. History, because of the nature of civil war and violence and the number of Americans that were dying fighting each other, pushed that issue to the forefront.
Yes.
People tend to forget the other thing. Let me be more distinct. The other specific political reasons that the president needed to address the slavery issue is that what the Union was running out of warm bodies, and there were 250,000 Negroes ready to come and to fight for the Union cause, and more importantly, for their own freedom and the freedom of their people. So sometimes we don't have the kind of real discussion that we need to have on the issue of Abraham Lincoln, right. Emancipation Proclamation, 1863. We need to be a little bit more transparent.
and
Mr. Allen, turn it back to you. Go ahead.
Okay,
and
Is
this Mr. Turnbull? Yeah, I would like to give you a couple seconds before we move on to our next. Go ahead, sir.
Sure. I'd like to say something about, I think it's Mr. Wilson.
William?
Is that the other gentleman that's...
No, Edwards.
Okay,
is the name. Edwards. Mm-hmm.
Okay, Edwards, I'm sorry. You talk about what have they done for us lately, and
no,
I
that
talked
was,
to Donnie...
That was, I'm sorry, that was Mr. Williams was the gentleman saying
that. Was me.
Yeah.
Okay, that was Mr. Williams, that's what I thought. Okay.
Mr. Allen and Mr. Edwards are the co-host. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Okay. I talked to Donnie during the whole tornado that came through the North Minneapolis area, and I've driven through North Minneapolis before. I live in Brooklyn Park, and I drive through down Broadway sometimes to get home because I work downtown Minneapolis. And that place is still a war zone. And when you ask, what have you done for me lately, I point out what has Minneapolis and the entire Democratic leadership done for North Minneapolis after that literally nuclear weapon went off in that area. It's just a destruction. And I've not seen anything built. They've cleaned up the stuff so you got electricity, but beyond that, they have done nothing.
I just believe
that let's put it to you this way. I would challenge a contest. If your voting bloc said, okay, we're going to vote for the Republicans, how quick is the mayor and all of the other Democrats going to come rushing down there and say, okay, what do you need? What do you want? They're ready to give you stuff, but only if they feel challenged.
Well,
and
no,
that,
stuff,
to me...
I got to tell you about stuff, because stuff sounds like O'Reilly. What do you mean when you say stuff?
Well, the money to rebuild the buildings that have been destroyed. I mean...
Well, let me say this, because Mr. Allen and myself have been very much involved in that whole issue, and we have written and talked about on our mutual platforms the whole situation with respect to Democratic leadership and Republican leadership. But let me say, just to balance this out, to make this a balanced playing field, if I remember correctly, in 2011, the Republicans were in control, with the exception of the governor's office, were in control of both houses of the legislature. And the Republicans could have provided leadership as a part of what Mr. Williams has been saying, Mr. Allen and I have been talking about, and have found ourselves sometimes the target of Democratic leadership. The Republicans could have taken full advantage of that, if you will, particularly in light of the importance of the black vote in 2010 to put Mark Dayton into the Democratic governorship, if you will. So there is enough blame, quote unquote, to go around with respect to the lack of leadership, if you will. The problem is, I think you should know, I certainly do, is that this has basically been a Democratic outpost since 1944 when a guy by the name of Hubert Humphrey became mayor, okay? And it's really tough to convince Republicans that Minneapolis is a Democratic bastion, that they should be prepared to roll their sleeves up and go after people irrespective of race, creed, color, or national origin. Now, that's what I think we've been talking about. When Republicans are prepared to give a sense of equality across the board, and I wasn't telling a joke just a couple minutes ago when I said, I have difficulty believing, though, that the Republicans will appreciate, buy, respect, or anything else, the opinions of people of color. They aren't psychologically, they aren't at that point.
I would disagree with that, because I look at one of the greatest Secretary of State we've ever had, and that was Condoleezza Rice.
After rendition, I'm pleased. You and I are really on separate pages there. No. I don't see Condoleezza Rice as the greatest Secretary of State. In fact, let's go back into our history a little bit. It was Condoleezza Rice, in concert with Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld, that worked to undermine Colin Powell with President Bush, which ultimately caused Colin Powell to decide he really didn't want to be a part of the continued scenario. And I refer you to a number of articles back in 2003, 2004, coming out of what has become a great American tragedy, and that is the battle in the Middle East. No, that's my own personal view, but I've got a bully pulpit, if you will. There's no way in the world I'd buy Condoleezza Rice.
Yeah, and James, too, on your comment about the Republican parties, there had been conversation, or there was conversation during the tornado. There were calls put into the Minnesota GOP, and I know you saw that. You might have saw that video when I walked into the Minnesota GOP and I asked to speak to the chairman or the vice chair, and the lady slammed down the number on a notepad and basically told me to get out of the office because I had no business there. And so, if we don't have any line of communication with the GOP, because it has been the Minneapolis or Minnesota DFL political plantation has promised the black Minnesotan everything, but has not delivered on anything, but expects all the votes all the time. But if the Republicans, like Mr. Edwards put it so elegantly, aren't ready to roll up their sleeves, come into the community, find out the needs and address it, then actually they don't want to. And so that's my point. But we have someone else on hold, Mr. Edwards. I'd like to get them in on the conversation.
All right, and we want to thank both of those gentlemen for taking the time to call in and dialogue with us. Go ahead, Don. Let's get the call.
You guys, thanks, Mr. Williams.
Thank you. You're live on the air, 29269. Your name and where you're calling from.
Yeah, peace. Thanks for taking my call. My name is Matthew, calling from Michigan.
Okay.
Just kind of listening at the show. The last caller, I think the point or the nature of what he's saying underneath that was not understood, because he makes a good point, and that's this. The black community as a national political interest group is the most immature group of people in the United States. And so it's a valid issue when the brother says, what have you done for me lately,
mm-hmm.
when you can probably count on one hand what have Democrats done for blacks on a national scale. And one of the reasons why you can probably count it on one hand, because blacks don't have a national agenda to put to Democrats or Republicans.
Well, first of all, I think you probably misunderstood some of the response. I mean, we clearly on this end, as commentators, clearly understood what all parties were saying. It was Mr. Williams, though, that raised the question about what have you done for us lately. We've all raised that question. I mean, you're absolutely on point, though I do somewhat disagree. I think there have been attempts by the African-American leadership, black leadership, over many, many years to try to move a national agenda. I mean, one of the things that did happen 40 years ago, the national agenda was civil rights, and within the context of civil rights were many different compartments, if you will. But here's something, sir, that and maybe you help me work through this, because I've seen black political leadership, elected and otherwise, try to get into the debate, particularly over the last 40 years in this country, on wars. Because, by the way, the majority of conflict and the majority of people being killed by American and European military action are people of color. I think we would all agree to that. And I've seen attempts made by African Americans to get into that debate and that discussion, and I'm just fascinated by how we are quickly dismissed. Now, the Congressional Caucus on many occasions has attempted to position itself on the debate of wars, economic development, particularly in Africa, other developing countries of color, and et cetera. And I don't think either the Republicans or the Democrats have a lot of respect. So what would be your suggestion to get their attention, to make them understand that we also have a national and international agenda? What would be your recommendation?
Well, and I think that's a very good question. The thing about it is, if there is no local black agenda, that means there's no regional black agenda. If there is no regional black agenda, that means there is no national.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. All right. So now let's just go right back down to the local. If you look at the time when I think blacks were the most sophisticated as it relates to playing European politics inside of this culture, it was during the times when they were the strongest economically. The surge of black-owned banks, when we were at the height of business development,
mm-hmm.
right,
mm-hmm.
and things of that nature. So that is what drives a political agenda, a national political agenda, like you talk about war.
Mm-hmm.
Well, blacks have no interest group in war other than we dying.
You're right about that.
They're not the contractors. They have to, you see what I'm saying? We have no lot, you see what I'm saying? We have nothing to gain out of war but some dead bodies.
Absolutely correct. Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See, so like I was talking to some brothers. They said, man, we can't unify. Well, we have a history of unifying. We just don't know it. And we just done got away from it.
Mm-hmm. And I can have a deep appreciation of what you just said seconds ago. We've gotten away from it. Mr. Allen, I think some good observations by this gentleman from Michigan.
Yes.
I'm going to make one more quick point, and I'll let you guys go.
All right, sir.
On the show talking to the sisters from Chicago. You remember when the battle over the contract, right, for public schools?
Public schools, yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. Yes, okay. I told them, sisters, I said, listen, let me tell y'all one thing. I said, Democrats don't give a damn about y'all in this public school. Why you say that? It's about the education of all our kids. I said, you want to know? I said, this is all you need to do. Let the word get out that the black teachers who are in the unions are getting ready to meet with the black pastors in Chicago, and they're getting ready to do charter schools where you're going to control the bus contracts, the food service contracts. You're going to you're going to be able to hire the teachers, the textbooks. You're going to see Democrats be just like Republicans. The hell with public education. We don't need it.
Point well made, sir. Point well made. Thank you, sir. All right.
Yep.
Take care.
Thank you.
The brother out of Michigan's been doing his homework, Mr. Allen.
Yes, he has. Point
well made. Do we have any other callers? Because I don't want anybody to call and feel that they can't get through.
We don't have any other callers, but I do think Mr. Dr. Williams is still on the line with us.
Yeah, I'm still on.
Yeah.
I'm loving this conversation.
Okay,
and I wanted to take it all in and hear what was – I mean, that last caller made some excellent points, but his assertion begs the question, then why – aren't the Republicans, and I'm not there in Minnesota, I'm in Virginia, so I'm looking at this from an outside point of view. A lot of things that you all are talking about that I'm not going to comment on too hard because I'm not there.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a situation, where are the Republicans that are going to say, you know what, I'm not going to worry about stereotypes or past images or whatever. If working with the Black Panthers – is going to get me some black votes and going to help my core values. Because, you know, in terms of self-determination, and all that, Nation of Islam and Black Panthers, they share a lot of the same things Republicans say they talk about. I was listening once when I was at the Million Man March years ago. I was listening to Louis Farrakhan talk about social responsibility of African American men, and for that small piece, you know, there was the anti-Semitic stuff and all that stuff that we go through, but for that piece, I'm able to divorce issues. I'm able to look at the issues individually, and for that specific piece, I'm thinking to myself, if Louis Farrakhan had a white face and took off that bow tie, he's saying the same stuff that Newt Gingrich is saying about social responsibility. So then, where are the Republicans that, you know what, I know about the Black Panthers, I know about the NOI, I know about, but you know what, where I can fit in, I'm going to get in and see what common ground we can find so I can attract some more of these African-American voters, these voters of color. See, that's the problem, I think, with the Republicans. And all the callers are making a great point about what the Democrats are and aren't doing. I get it. But whether they're doing something or not, and we can debate that, the Democrats are engaging the discussion.
And that's what
Republicans aren't even doing.
They're
that.
Engaging. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Republicans got to engage. Now the Democrats are masters of engaging. Mm-hmm. We can debate how much they're actually doing with the follow-through, and that's the debate we can have. I understand that. But I don't even see Republicans engaging, and until they begin to engage, until they get rid of those sensibilities, I can't deal with that person because
okay.
his name is different than mine, and he believes in separatism, and he believes he may believe in all those things, but what else does he believe in? Accountability, self determination, you have people having their own businesses, people creating their own economies. Those are Republican values. So how can you not? As a smart person, you go in, you say, I don't agree with you on A, B, and C, but D, E, F, and G, I'm right there with you. How can we help each other out?
And this is the way politics has worked in the so-called democratic societies of this planet since the time of the Greeks, if you will. And I find it, as a historian, rather interesting when that kind of philosophy / strategy proposal is put forward by people of color. And this word was used quite a bit in this election. In fact, it was used a couple times in the debate. Well, that's foreign to us.
Well, here you go again.
Yeah. Particularly in light of the fact that much of the structure of this country, particularly in such things as land and banking and et cetera, you know, it wasn't – because what the Native Americans had was called unacceptable. This was brought to us from Europe.
Right. Right.
And so there's a lot of foreignness that exists in the current structure and institutions of this nation. And Dr. Williams, I mean, we're concurring, we're on the same page that I just think there's a tinge called racism, if you will.
Right.
That until that can be cleansed, and I'm not talking about the cleansing of the, in like Adolf
Hitler. I know what you mean.
But I'm talking about positive cleansing, until that can be cleansed from the fiber, the DNA. If you will, it just ain't gonna happen.
But why can we? I'm just trying to figure out because I don't know. I see myself now, and I'm looking at what's happening. I'm looking at the reaction from this election, which really kind of scares me. I look at all the things that have been said about just this particular president. I look at the whole idea of being called a socialist when, in fact, under this economy, wealthy people have done just as well, if not better, than they did under the previous administration. I look at people saying things about, you know, President Obama's a terrorist. It seems like that racism really does play a key, because there's so many things that President Obama is doing other than the social issues that are mirrored policies of previous Republican administrations. But
absolutely,
the only difference is his name is Obama, not Smith or West or Johnson or whatever. And it just perplexes me.
Or Harding or Coolidge.
Right.
Yeah, I got you. Go ahead.
it just perplexes me. I don't want to give up on it. I don't want to say this is just racism pure and simple. But I'm beginning to feel the same way that you're feeling, in terms of just I'm not sure – Until maybe what has to happen is maybe the Republican Party has to be in actual danger of falling over, not the fiscal cliff, but the political cliff, that maybe they'll begin to reach out to folks that they normally would dismiss. Because if they don't, they will be the modern Whig Party.
Yes, 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 and I fully concur. That's the reason that earlier in this program I made mention of the fact of the respect that is still held in significant quarters in the Republican Party of Colin Powell.
Yes.
To me, that may be the person that the Koch brothers, because,
yeah,
you know, that's clear who runs the Republican Party. The Koch brothers may have to send a message from Desert Springs, from Palm Springs out there outside of Los Angeles, and indicate this will be the agenda, and this is how things will be run, and this is what has to happen. Now, you know, Mitch McConnell and Boehner and all of them can jump up and down, and if someone plays a tape of this program for them and say that that's the most ridiculous thing I've heard, et cetera, and then immediately signal to the secretary to call on the private number of the Koch brothers, okay? What do you guys think we should do? You know, what should we do? Because let me say this on a serious note. The Koch brothers will have a significant role in any reorganization that is determined and is under discussion at this very moment as we talk here over these communication lines. The Koch brothers are already sitting and over a glass of a very old brandy, if you will, in front of the fireplace, even though it's out in the desert, are discussing what the next moves will be.
Well, can I ask one question before I go, because I'm loving this discussion? I want to ask this one question. Then we need to find out, how do the Koch brothers feel about black folks? Because if they share the same opinion that the GOP does, that won't matter either. So if the Koch brothers are willing to sit down with black folks, then maybe the GOP has a chance.
And you know what we'll do? We will probe that because I have sources in California. And that's interesting because there was a discussion along those lines about a year ago. You know, Dr. Williams, that's a doggone good question. What do they really feel? Do they have any rich black friends?
Yeah, or any poor black friends, or any nannies that raised them. I don't know. Do you know some black folks?
Yeah, that's
and
right.
Do you feel decent about them?
That'll be a mission. Thank you, sir.
Have a great night. Thanks, guys.
Take care. All right.
And Mr. Edwards, we have another caller.
Let's get him, Don, because we're moving right along. This is excellent. Good.
Okay. You are looking at this. Let him get in the switchboard here. You're live on the air, Mass. Who's calling and where you're calling from? Hello.
This is Bertrand again. I just called back.
Okay. Go ahead, sir.
Actually, you know, for me, listening to all of this, a few things stuck out in my mind, especially me looking at it from where I'm at. I lived in Texas for a while, and so when I was, you know, just talking with people down there, a lot of Republicans seemed to take a liking to me. I'm not going to vote one party or the other because that's not how I vote. You know, if I don't have a choice between the lesser of the two evils, I'd rather leave it alone. You know, somebody has to be qualified for what they're talking about, according to what I believe in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a black person that's what have you done for me lately or anything. And maybe I'm only 34, you know, so maybe it's just my generation or whatever, because I see a lot of my peers. And, you know, it's my message from the Black Man Stand Up movement. What have we done for ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
We should be able to become economically independent. And then we'll be desired to be talking to be spoken to. The brother that called in earlier made a valid point. We are some of the most childish people in this country, if not the most childish and ornery people in this country, where when we're at the prime of our history here in America, we had the oil capital of the world, along with all the banks and everything else that we owned. Now, I do not believe that in 2012, 2013, going on to the future, that if we built our own economy, the KKK would come burn it down and people would drop bombs on us from
our own people might burn it down and drop bombs on us.
If we empower our people, if we take a stand in our communities,
well,
let me say this
with respect to the statement you just made, sir. There are and were periods of time long before any of us were born. I'm 73 years of age, so I've been around a long time. There was a situation, let me see if you're familiar with it, called the Black Wall Street, Tulsa, Oklahoma. If you haven't read books on that, you need to, because there was a flourishing black economic existence in Tulsa, one of the most sophisticated in the United States. What happened was that there was a very elaborate conspiracy to do, unfortunately, just what you said, probably would not happen with the Klan and et cetera. And what happened 80 years later, Tulsa, Oklahoma has never recovered. Black Wall Street was destroyed. 100 square blocks of the black community was destroyed. A similar situation took place in a much smaller enclave called Rosewood, Florida. But it is Tulsa that stands out in the memories, and those are faded memories now because many have died and passed on. But there was a, and it had an effect. The reason I bring it up to give you some point of reference, it had a serious impact on Negro thinking in that particular period, 1922, 23, 24. And then, unfortunately, we were impacted by the Depression, and in some respects, we've never recovered. But there is a very interesting story. It's called Black Wall Street, the Greenwood area. It's Tulsa, Oklahoma. And what was done there to black Americans was an act of treason, if you will. But what it did, because of a combination of other events, other circumstances, the conditions of lawlessness in this country against the Negro franchise, we probably lost a good 80 years of the opportunity to advance and put some of the things in place that you have just talked about. So I would leave you with that as a point of reference, okay? That there are conspiracies that are initiated in this country to quote unquote bring black Americans to their knees.
Yes, yes, there is. And Mr. Edwards, you were talking about things being foreign lately, and kind of under the topic of the Republican Party still. But you know, Fox News is running some damage control, and on November 7th, this last Wednesday, they put out a story that the five ways the mainstream media tipped the scales in favor for Obama. And I found that slightly problematic because, you know, if you're a realist and you follow what's going on here in this country, especially during the election year, and you listen and you watch Fox, you hear them, you listen to them, whatever. And there's a Donald Trump that pops up every now and then. And, you know, they're basically saying in this article that that the mainstream media, the liberal mainstream media, you know, tipped this election to President Obama. And I think that's far from the truth. And it's disturbing that they would even Fox. I wrote a story the other day because I think Fox News, especially in New York and on the West Coast, they owe America an apology. Donald Trump owes America an apology.
Don, what I'd like to suggest on that, because we only got about 2.5 minutes left,
yes,
on our extended program for this afternoon, and again, we thank our many callers, and we thank those that have tuned into us, irrespective of opinions and et cetera. I think that we should indicate that next week we want to spend some time, and hopefully we can encourage some of our fellow black journalists around the country to involve themselves in a dialogue, and maybe we'll be able to get another 15-minute expansion on our program to basically go 45 minutes. I would like to encourage, you and I are the co-hosts, a dialogue and discussion about those very false, quote-unquote, allegations, if you will, damage control that is going on, because there's something much more sinister behind that I've been made aware of over the last 48 hours. And so, we're going to indicate that next week we're going to take a look at the role of the press in election 2012.
Okay, and we have another caller, which will be our last caller, and then we'll just go into streaming mode. You're live on the air. Master's calling.
Yeah, Terry.
Hey, how you doing, sir?
Yeah, pretty good. Word has it that the mayor is receiving a position with the Obama administration. I'd like to know what your thoughts on all the people on the north side putting their hat in for mayor next year.
That's not going to happen. There's no one that's been cultivated, particularly who's an African-American, that would need to garner the necessary support for an African-American. We've only had one African-American mayor in the history of this city. That was Sharon Sells Belton, two terms. I thought she was a good mayor. I've been hearing that talk. I don't know who any of the glamour candidates could be.
Well,
also, I would question if the Obama administration is really looking at R.T. Ryback for a secretaryship, if you will. In other words, heading up one of the big departments. He would seem to be a person that would be at a lesser position, maybe a assistant secretary at best, and that would probably be in HUD.
Yes, yes. Stick him in HUD. Keep him in the back room.
Yeah,
Yeah, that would be our take, Terry. Okay.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I hear you, but I mean, HUD, come on now. The mayor, he leased that property over there to Heritage Park for $1 a year.
Yeah. And McCormick Barron, an outside developer, made all the money. Okay, and now Heritage Park is sinking into the ground because of poor soil, as well as other kinds of problems with toxicity and et cetera. So, whoopee, what is
that? I know you guys have to go, but where is Black History Museum at? What happened to that? Where is it at?
Oh, snap.
Look here, Terry. All the money's in Las Vegas.
Yes, we'll put it like that. Yeah. That's a great answer, too.
Okay. Give us a call next week, man.
Yeah,
I think that question needs to be asked at least, 8 or 9 to 10 minutes into the program so we can give it the kind of weight that it needs. Appreciate the call, man.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Doc, we're getting ready to wrap it.
We're getting ready to wrap it up. We'd like to thank everybody for listening to On Point, Black Politics Minneapolis On Point with Mr. Ronald A. Edwards in Studio B and me, Don Allen, Studio A, broadcasting live from the Apple Studios in downtown Minneapolis, overlooking the... What is that? The Target Field? What's that?
You got Target Field, you got Target Center, and you look back up towards the Viking Stadium.
Stadium, yes.
Let me quickly say this. Congratulations to President Barack Obama for his second term, and God bless the United States of America.